You can take your Bibles tonight. We're going to start in Hosea. That's right, Hosea. Chapter 14. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. Tonight we're going to be looking at a couple of Orientalisms. Orientalism is a cultural thing in the Bible that might be a phrase or a saying or something that to us today doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but to the people in the lands and times of the Bibles would make a lot of sense. And in Hosea chapter 14, verse 1, it says, O Israel, return unto the Lord thy God, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. Take with you words, and turn to the Lord. Say unto him, take away all iniquity, and receive us graciously. So will we render the calves of our lips. Asher shall not save us. We will not ride upon horses, neither will we say any more to the work of our hands, you are our gods, for in thee the fatherless find mercy. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from him. I will be as the dew unto Israel. He shall grow as the lily and cast forth his roots as Lebanon. His branches shall spread, and his beauty shall be as the olive tree, and his smell as Lebanon. And so here in verse 5 it says, or verse 6 it says, his branches shall spread. So here the restored people of Israel are likened to branches. And branches were often used as an illustration for a connection to something in the Word of God. And in this case, that connection was to God, right? That the children of Israel would be branches from which their delivering God would spread. So we're going to look at Ezekiel chapter 8. Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 17. Ezekiel chapter 8, verse 17 says, Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence, and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose. And that's the Orientalism that we're going to dig a little deeper into. They put the branch to their nose. Right, and we saw in Hosea that branches were often used as an illustration for a connection to something. So let's go to Jeremiah chapter 23. Jeremiah 23. What does it mean that they put a branch to their nose? Jeremiah 23, verse 5. It says, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous what?
Branch.
And a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is the name whereby he shall be called the Lord our righteousness. The Lord our righteousness. So in verse 5, we have the prophecy of the coming Messiah. in Jesus Christ, who in this case was called the righteous branch, right? And he was to be the Son of God. His direct connection was to God. And so he is called a branch, and a righteous branch at that. Go to John, the Gospel of John, chapter 15. So God uses the word branch to mean somebody or something that has a connection to something greater, right? And in a lot of cases, that is a connection to God. And here in John 15, verse 1, Jesus Christ is teaching his disciples. And it says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purges it. Means he goes in, he cultivates it, and then he prunes it so that, as it says in the rest of the verse, that it may bring forth more fruit, right? So there's these agricultural illustrations here. So the good branches, they produce fruit, and they continue to produce fruit. Verse 4. Or 3, now you are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can you, except you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. And so this was his teaching to his disciples, right? That they were connected to him. They were his disciples. He that abides in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit, so shall you be my what? Disciples. Right. And so Jesus likened himself to a vine, and of which his disciples would be branches. They were to have a connection with him. And for us in the Grace Administration, that connection is Christ in us, the hope of glory, right? And we bear great fruit as a result. So let's go back to Ezekiel chapter 8, and we'll start in verse 15. To get a running start there. Ezekiel 8:15. So the context of this verse that we read before with the branch to their nose is that the children of Israel were once again doing what they did and turning away from God to other things. Verse 15 says, then said he unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see the greater abominations than these. If you read back in the chapter, he just keeps going to different things that these guys were doing wrong in terms of idolatry and other stuff. And then he would say, now look at this. Even worse than this is this, and even worse than this is this. Verse 16, and he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, there were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord, and their faces toward the east, and they worshiped the sun toward the east. All right, so they were in God's temple with their backs towards the altar, worshiping something else, right? And that's what he was pointing out here to Ezekiel. So verse 17 says, and then he said unto me, hast thou seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? Is this no big deal to them? For they have filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose. And that branch to their nose is they, in the the lands and times of the Bibles, they had these little coin-like discs that they put a branch on. And that branch was to remind them or be a symbol to them of their connection to God. And in this case, they would pierce it through and hang it from their nose as like an ornament. And so God is saying, look, they're doing all this stuff. They filled the land with violence. They've returned to provoke me to anger. And look, they put a branch to their nose, right? As if they're not doing anything wrong. As if that's going to take care of all of this idolatry and other stuff that they're doing. They're pretending like they still have any kind of connection to me. Verse 18, therefore will I also deal in fury. Mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. Right? And we know that that's the idiom of permission. But they were turning their backs on God. Right? They were turning their backs on God. So the branch to the nose refers to that little ornament or jewelry that they would wear to represent their connection with God, but their heart wasn't in it, right? Their heart wasn't in it. It was, they were just being hypocritical to what was in their heart. And we know that 1 Samuel 16:7 says that God looks at where? On the heart, right? On the heart. That's what God cares about. And so these guys were looking the part. They were trying to act like they still had a connection to God, all the while they had turned to idolatry and turned their backs on God. Go to Isaiah chapter 1. So that's what it means to put a branch to their nose. The next one we're going to look at is in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 8. Isaiah chapter 1. Verse 8, it says, and the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. And so the phrasing there we're going to look at tonight is a cottage in a vineyard or a lodge in a garden of cucumbers. Sounds delightful, doesn't it? Sounds delightful. Well, you can turn one book back to Song of Solomon chapter 2. Song of Solomon chapter 2, verse 15. So what is it to be a cottage? Or a lodge in a garden of cucumbers? Delightful. Solomon 2, 15, it says, take us the foxes. And the word take there is take like to remove. All right, so it could be better translated, remove from us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. And so in Bible times, they would have a lot of what they did was agriculture. They would set up vineyards, they would set up olive trees. And predators were a regular problem, right? And in this case, it's talking about the foxes that would come in and spoil the vines. They would eat the grapes and the fruit off the vines and spoil them. And so the request here is to remove those foxes, right? It's an analogy, but remove the foxes that are stealing our fruit. Go to Job chapter 27. So they had to be on the lookout for and be prepared for predators, for things that would want to take what they had in their gardens. In Job 27, verse 18, it says, he buildeth his house as a moth, and as a booth that the keeper maketh. That word keeper there is in reference to a watchman. A watchman. And a watchman would make a booth, a small structure in order to have a place to, with a little bit of shelter to hang out in when they were on guard, when they were watching out for these predators, right? And the booth was that little structure that they made. So that's what it's referring to there. If you go to Isaiah chapter 24, Isaiah chapter 24, we can read a little bit more about these structures. Isaiah 24, verse 20. Verse 20. It says, "The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard." "The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, and shall be removed like a what? Like a cottage. And the transgression thereof shall be heavy upon it, and it shall fall and not rise again." Right? And so these keepers, these watchmen, they would build little huts, little towers in these gardens to stay and protect them from the predators, right? From the foxes and the other things that would try to get at the fruit. And these structures were meant to be very temporary. So there wasn't a whole lot of work put into it, right? It wasn't like built on a nice foundation with really good walls. It was more of a quick and dirty structure for these watchmen to have during the time of the growing season before harvest. And once they harvested everything, they didn't need those structures anymore. Those guys were not standing out there during the off season guarding anything because there was no fruit. So they just had to whip up these quick structures, these booths or cottages, and they were meant to be very temporary. And that's what it's talking about here. It shall be removed like a cottage. Like, it's there during the little season, and then it's gone. And they don't reuse it or do anything with it. So go back to Isaiah chapter 1 again. We'll start in verse 4 this time. So with that understanding, we can kind of see that a little more clearly here. In Isaiah 1 verse 4, it says, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." So once again, really doing a great job here, Israel. Verse 7, "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate, as overthrown by strangers. And the daughter of Zion," referring to Israel, "is left as a cottage in a vineyard, as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city." Right? And so the greater illustration or message here is that, you know, they were in a sad state, once again, because they had turned their backs on God, but we understand the besieged city. And now we can better understand what a cottage and a vineyard would be to them, what a lodge and a garden of cucumbers would be, this very run-down, temporary structure that's here today and gone tomorrow and was kind of laid to waste, right? And God was trying to tell them that they were in a sorry state because they had turned their back on God, and that a nation focused on God is a nation that prospers. And the last one we'll look at is in Isaiah 50. Isaiah 50, verse 11. So a lodge in a garden of cucumbers sounds really pleasant, but it's not very pleasant. It's a desolate thing. Isaiah 50, verse 11. It says, "Behold, all ye that kindle a fire, that compass yourselves about with sparks." And that's what we're going to look at. What is it to compass yourselves about with sparks? "Walk in the light of your fire and in the sparks that you have kindled. This shall you have of my hand. You shall lie down in what? Sorrow." Ooh, that doesn't sound good. Doesn't sound good. Go to Acts chapter 27 to get a little better picture of this. Acts 27, verse 40. Compass yourself about with sparks. Acts 27, verse 40. Now, the context of this record is when Paul and the crew that he was with, as he was a prisoner traveling to Rome, they fell upon shipwreck, right? Part of their journey. They thought they were all going to die. Paul prayed, and they lived, but the ship was wrecked. Verse 40, it says, "And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands, and hoist up the mainsail to the wind, and made toward shore. And falling into a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground, and the forepart stuck fast and remained unmovable. But the hinder part was broken with the violence of the waves. And the soldiers' counsel, or their deliberation, was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. But the centurion, willing to save Paul, kept them from their purpose, and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and to get to land. And the rest, some on the boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land." Chapter 28. "And when they were escaped, then they knew that the island was called Melita. And the barbarous people," so the locals, "showed us no little kindness. They were very kind. For they kindled a fire and received us every one because of the present rain and because of the cold. And when Paul had gathered" what? "A bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And when the barbarians saw that the venomous beast hang on his hand, they said among themselves, 'No doubt this man's a murderer, whom though he had escaped the sea, yet vengeance suffereth not to live.'" All right, so these guys, you know, believed in other gods, and they thought, well, this guy obviously did something bad if this snake bit him, because he should have died in the sea, and now the snake's, you know, finishing the job. Verse 5, "And he shook off the beast into the fire and felt no harm. Howbeit they looked when he should have swum." They kept watching him. They're like, all right, any minute now he's going to keel over. "How he should have swollen or fallen down dead suddenly. But after they looked a great while and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said he was a what? A god." No. Yeah, he was a murderer. No, he's a god. Anyway, the point of reading this record was mostly for verse 3, that Paul gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire. Right? In small agricultural villages in the lands and times of the Bible, it was customary for all the men to wake up in the morning and gather at the town center, and the first guy there would start to kindle the fire, and then everybody would come bringing sticks to add to the fire, right? That was the way that it worked in the morning. So you would never come to the fire in the morning to meet the rest of the villagers with whom you were about to go to work and not bring some sticks, not bring something to add to the fire, right? And that was Paul's attitude here, was that he was, you know, they had just shipwrecked and all this other stuff, but he knew that it was customary to bring more fuel for the fire, to contribute, to be a part of what was happening, right? If you go back to Isaiah 50, verse 10, Isaiah 50, verse 10, the other thing that these villagers would then do is, once they had warmed themselves by the fire and they were ready to head out into the fields for the day, it would still be very dark, right? They would kindle this fire before the sun rose, and they would need to light their way out into the fields. And so they would have these ropes, often made out of coconut husk or other things, that were loosely tied together, and all the frayed edges of the rope, they would light it on fire. And it would basically be their old version of a flashlight, right? We just pull out the flashlight in the morning and, you know, find our way to go. But they would light these ropes in the fire before they headed off for the day, and it would be what lit their path so they could find the way to the fields and not accidentally step on anything that, you know, scorpion or a snake or something that might otherwise harm them. So that's what the idea here is, that they would light these ropes and the sparks would give off light for them. Verse 10, who is among you that fears the Lord, that obeys the voice of his servant, that walks in darkness and has no light? Let him trust in the name of the Lord and stay or rest upon his God. Right? And so the question is, who among you is walking in darkness? Who doesn't have light? Right? Let that person trust in the name of the Lord and rest upon his God. Right? That's what that person should do. Verse 11, behold, all ye that kindle a fire and compass or surround yourselves about with sparks, walk in the light of your fire and in the sparks that you have kindled. And so the illustration here is that these guys are trying to make their own light. They're trying to figure out things for themselves. They're lighting their own ropes and surrounding themselves with sparks in an attempt to figure things out for themselves. And that's why the verse finishes, this shall you have of my hand. You shall lie down in what? Sorrow. Right? Because if you're trying to do it yourself and you're trying to figure it out your own way and not trusting in God, things likely aren't going to go the best that they could go. And we'll close in Psalm 119, verse 105. Psalm 119, verse 105. Instead of trying to compass ourselves about with our own sparks, 105 says, thy word is a lamp unto what? My feet. And a light unto my path. That's right. God's word is what lights our path. It's the light that we need for our feet, not our own rope or our own sparks or our own way of doing things, right? His ways are higher than our ways, and his thoughts are greater than our thoughts, right? So we turn to God, and we will be successful, rather than trying to figure it out on our own. So, thought it would be cool to look at a couple neat little Orientalisms in the Bible. Hope you learned a little something.